Today is the 14th of June. We are sitting in hall number 27 at this newly established CeBIT fair. And we have not only new decoration, but we have new people and we have new mindsets. And I was the lucky one to listen to one of these people who actually could elaborate on this personal mindset. And I would like to make an interview with him. And the best way is to ask himself about himself. So just present yourself first.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the time. My name is Ed Doran. I come from Microsoft Research. My focus is, how do we think about technologies that are ready to grow and contribute to the world? So you have these amazing ideas coming out of brilliant minds in academia, in research, and those ideas reach an inflection point where they've turned into enough of a technology that they can then be scaled out and they can start to interact with people in the entire world. And that's an exciting place to work, and that's where I spend my time.
What was your reason to join Microsoft, I think, 9 years ago?
Great question. I was originally recruited from Yahoo. What I loved about working at Yahoo, it was an incredibly creative place. And we had the chance to be on this new world that was the web. The web was exciting. It democratized technology. It opened up new opportunities for a much broader set of people. And when I looked at Microsoft, what occurred to me was the next wave of innovation is going to be not only the web, but the new kinds of hardware that would enable, the new kinds of services that would be delivered on it. And it felt like a great opportunity to work with a really diverse set of people and be contributing to that next generation of technology.
You have been here today as a representative of a topic called artificial intelligence. Everybody is talking about that. The interesting thing is you didn't talk about it, you showed it to us. Can you just give us two or three examples which are, in your mind, good examples to make us understand what really is behind this coined phrase?
So artificial intelligence is something that's been around for quite some time in academic circles. You're really just looking at machines' ability to perceive, to learn, and reason. What's different now is that those core capabilities have reached a point of maturity where you can do really amazing things. You have devices on the edge that are cheap and incredibly powerful. We have networks to connect them that allow amazing things to flow back and forth to the cloud and really deep, rich services within the cloud. And so when you look at those components, I look at the projects that my friends do and I'm excited by their work. I have a friend who's done some amazing work called FarmBeats, where he really asked a fundamental question, which is, if I had all of these great tools, could I make it easier, cheaper, and better to grow food and feed a nation, feed the world, because the population will increase and we need to have healthy food to deliver to them? It's a great project. I've got other people working on things where they decide there are certain challenges to humanity. Cancer is definitely one of them. And while doctors work for decades to build up incredible knowledge bases and work diligently to fight cancer, we could give them more tools. And we have something called InnerEye that helps radiologists identify tumors more accurately and make it easier to treat those cancers. These are the kinds of things that I find really inspiring. I'll mention Seeing AI as well. This is an app we developed using all the speech recognition work we've done for a decade and the object recognition work we've done, so that if you have difficulty with your sight, you can see your friends, you can recognize your friends, you can recognize their emotional state. And that's a profoundly human thing, the ability to connect with other people, because at any time, any one of us, not just permanently may have challenges, but temporarily or situationally. That ability for technology to bridge those gaps is fascinating and exciting.
And on your talk, you mentioned two ideas which are very close to the theme of arts and fine arts, right?
Yes, though I have no artistic skill whatsoever, I have a few friends who are artists. And they're not only artists, they're technologists. So one of them will write prose with their AI. They developed an AI that allows them to take turns writing poetry together. Another developed an AI that can write short stories in different themes. So you can be Elizabethan, you could be Gothic, you could be modern. And the third one, she does amazing work in video art, and she uses AI to create new visualizations. So much of the conversation around AI tends to be computational or deeply technical, but AI is also a tool to unlock your creativity, to make even the least creative people that you know, mainly me, capable of art. And that's wonderful.
I remember folks I worked with like Bill Viola or Nanyum Paik. The interesting thing is people like Nanyum Paik, they actually destroyed their piano to make art. Do we have to destroy technology to be inventive again?
I think we have to create the technology we need. There's an endless amount of predictions about the future of artificial intelligence. The reality is we're terrible at predicting things. What we're good at is creating things. And so I think by having everyone around the table to create the AI that we really want, we end up with a much better AI. We want not just technologists. We want artists. We want ethicists. We want philosophers. That's how we end up with an AI that's really contributing to humanity.
In that moment, I would like to add another question because you spoke about worldwide research and development. But the world is a tremendous mixture of culture and understanding and well-being and disasters. How can we integrate all these different aspects of life into this kind of technology exposure? Or maybe it's not a technology exposure at all anymore.
I think the reality is we need all the creativity, the empathy, the industry to make AI real and build the AI that we want. On a tangible level, we've done that at Microsoft Research by establishing research labs in Asia, in India, in Silicon Valley, in the Northwest, in New York, in Boston, in Montreal, in Cambridge. And we have researchers in other places beyond it, because the reality is you want to have an inclusive approach here. Beyond that, though, I think you need to have an intense understanding of different people and a deep respect for how they want to live their lives. I was doing ethnographic research, which is you go to a country and you sort of try to be part of someone's life. In China recently, I met a young gentleman who was arguably the coolest person I've ever met. He had a dance crew. He made his own music. He challenged other dance crews and sold tickets and created this entire network around him. And I was talking to him about how to make his life better, and I was waiting for him to say, oh, help me find new music, or help me discover a new venue for my art, or help me find new people to challenge because I love that community. And I asked him the question, and he paused. And a long silence ensued. And then he said, help me know that my grandmother ate a meal today. Help me know that she's left the house today. Now, it would have been really easy to look at his life and how he spent it and all of his successes and think that the highest order of AI would have been related to those hobbies for which he's tremendously successful. But the highest order of AI spoke to his core needs as a person. Help me care for the people I love. That's a profoundly meaningful lesson for me. And that's the kind of thing you bring back to the lab and bring back to the research to say, it may take 10 years to crack this problem. It may take 10 years to solve this. But we're speaking to a human condition and we're trying to help people do what's right.
Although I just do the interview, may I have the chance for 30 seconds to elaborate on this idea? Okay. If you play music, sometimes the most important part in the music is the moment where there's none. If we speak about artificial intelligence, it is something totally invisible as the moment of silence in music. But on the other side, it's the most important part of the whole backbone which you're going to develop for our next and further upcoming generations. Going too far with this idea? You have a PhD. Maybe you have an idea on that one.
I think it's been said that jazz are the notes you don't play. In many ways, technology is what came about after you were born. The really good technology is so compelling it becomes seamless into your everyday life. So in many ways, I think shifting the attention off the AI and onto the people is probably the best and ultimate goal. How do we empower people, if they want to be an artist, to learn a new style, to apply that style to a new kind of art, to express themselves? How do we connect people who could never speak with each other because they don't speak the same language and they live on the opposite sides of the planet, but now we have technology that can do it? how do we help people do better in school so they can achieve their dreams and not fall off the path because in the short term, things look complicated or confusing. For AI to fade into the background and for our attention to focus on improving the human condition is an outstanding goal.
In the end of this talk, just let's come back to us. What was your topic of your PhD when you coined it? And if you have the chance to write a second one, what would be your new topic?
So my PhD was based on a fundamental question that I wanted to make sure that we could statistically model things accurately. And in order to model them accurately, that meant doing some new statistical work, but it also meant inventing or applying some new technologies to measure that work and make sure it was real. What I particularly loved about my PhD was not just the statistics and the hardware, it's that I chose a vulnerable population. So I could have modeled traffic flow and used cameras to measure cars. Instead, what I did was I measured the exposure of seasonal farm workers. It's a population that got very little science attention, that had potentially risk associated with pesticide exposure. So it was a perfect opportunity to say, I will apply the models to their experience. I will apply the new hardware to measuring and truthing those models, and I will hopefully gain new insight into their lives and how we could make it better. And I have to say, when I did that work, when I visited the farm workers, when they invited me into their homes and I met their families, I felt really good about my choice. It was a remarkably hardworking, remarkably loving, remarkably conscientious group, and it was a pleasure to work with them.
And if you have the chance to tackle another subject today, what would it be?
If I had a chance to do another subject today, it would probably be either the transparency of AI. We have incredibly powerful AI that allows us to predict things well, but sometimes it could replicate some inherent biases or unconscious biases that we have. And there are new techniques to crack open that black box and try to not only do a good job of predicting things, but maybe make sure that you're predicting the right things. The other thing I would probably think about would be really going directly after unconscious bias. There's some very interesting conversations happening around, while AI may be very good at reflecting society, there's some parts of society that we should do better at. So how do you build ethical, transparent, and inclusive AI?
Thank you very much indeed. I just thought myself about what would be my subject. And I think it would be, what is the interdisciplinary relationship between IA and serendipity?
That's a fantastic question. There's a body of research on unexpected results that are delightful. That's a fascinating thing to think about. I think one of our fundamental characteristics as humans is we are inherently curious, and we inherently love certain kinds of variability. AI would be very interesting to play with in terms of how do we not just help people get things done, but how do we delight them? And delight has an inherent dimension of surprise.
This interview turns out to be long, long, so we just stop it here. The only last question is maybe a little tricky, but I really mean it by heart. Imagine any question I should have asked, I didn't ask, and try to find an answer to that question.
You ask very good questions. I think the question that sometimes should be asked is, how do you define what the right answer is for AI? So much of AI is built around the idea that we're trying to predict things accurately. Accurately can be I can recognize a dog versus a cat in a photo. The right answer may be that I can win a game of Ms. Pac-Man. Can you teach me how to do that? I think there's an entire body of questions around how do we make sure that for the limited resources we have, the limited number of professionals we have working in this space, that we're challenging ourselves with the highest value applications of AI. When you ask that question, you automatically think about things like healthcare. This is a field where people train for decades. They work extremely diligently, but maybe we should be giving them more powerful tools. Maybe we could be better at helping them measure outcomes or diagnose things. Where are the opportunities for AI to truly make a difference in the world? We've touched on food. We've touched on accessibility and inclusivity. I would say then we should touch on health. How do we help ourselves live healthier, better lives?
I appreciate your time, your comment, and your presence. Thank you very much indeed, having been here our guest at CeBIT at this year 2018.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.